The Late Lunch with Blackstone Motors. Order your Renault 191 today and avail of low APR finance, cashback and 3-year servicing. Visit Blackstone Motors today or see blackstonemotors.ie.
Now, my first guest today on the show is a longtime friend of Late Lunch. She's been coming to us on and off for many moons, and I even had the privilege of launching her first ever book, Fertility, Stress and Anxiety, Relationship Issues, Weight Loss and Addictions, all fall within the remit of the brilliant Helena Tuberty. Helena, good to see you again.
Good to see you too, and very happy.
Thank you very much for joining me on the show this afternoon. First of all, may I say to you, congratulations on achieving a wonderful educational qualification. I want to tell listeners, you took out your MA in Ethics.
Yes, indeed. It was a wonderful 2-year course at DCU. Very much continuing professional development, so a very natural progression in the sense I was able to get access to so much information, so many academic peer-reviewed studies, and find out what's going on. My interest for this was very much male infertility, which is the Cinderella of fertility issues. So I really got to grips with that. It was fascinating. Loved every minute of it.
And ethics, when you mention ethics in the world today, have we become more unethical, do you think, in a general sense? I know you would have studied general and then specialised in what you did. Actually, what's your feelings on that?
Well, in your line, we did media ethics,
yes,
and we did bioethics, and we got a whole, you know, the history, the general, good overview, and human rights, of course. So I think there is an awareness. Sometimes it's a little bit of a tick box exercise. Things are very commercially driven. Certainly in the infertility world, regulation hasn't been well established so far. And I do think that, you know, with younger people, there is a growing awareness. I think our hope is definitely with the younger generation. I think they're absolutely amazing.
That's good to hear for the future, and very positive indeed. Now, look, you're here at the start of a new year again, and at this time of the year, tying in with all the work and the range of work you do, a lot of people take this time to reassess their lives and sort of draw a line in the sand and hope to start again from a number of perspectives. Let's say they all come under the New Year resolution banner. What do you make of New Year's resolutions? Are they worthwhile?
They're aspirational, but they can lead to an incredible sense of failure. I like to look at it. In fact, yesterday I was with Edmund Carroll over in Athboy. This Athboy, as you know, is a hub of great therapy. So Edmund and I spent a couple of hours together doing my goal mapping. It was an opportunity for me to see, what are my goals? What are my aspirations? What do I want to do? Business, health, finances, life in general. And it really does focus the mind on, I suppose, having, you know, achievable, realistic, measurable goals. You know, the idea of, I want to be a size 8 or a size 10, and I'm a size 16 or 14 or whatever it is. You know, you need to plan it out. You need to do it in a measurable, manageable way. It is doable. And I think if you've got a plan that's chunked down into very, very small constituent parts, you can follow those. New Year's resolutions, I think the basics are good to encourage you. You know, the idea of getting up every morning and making your bed, the army, the boarding school idea, that if your bed is made, you've achieved something to begin with. It never seemed like that when I was at boarding school, because we had to pleat curtains and I wasn't good at pleating curtains. But the sense of having a sense of achievement. So I like to start with the basics for my clients. Everybody's got to go to bed at night and sleep. So why not do it in an intelligent way? Go to bed at the same time. Plan for 8 hours. Keep devices out of your room. Do the stuff that works. And then, you know, at weekends, keep a similar line going to make sure you get enough sleep. Then you wake refreshed. You're ready for the day's challenges. You're more resilient. Your brain is clear. You can take aboard more information. You can learn more and do more. Eat well. We all have to fuel our bodies and our brains. You know, the latest thinking on, you know, cardiac disease, the, you know, the carbs, the insulin quotient. That's a really, really interesting field of study. Ivor Cummins is doing a lot on that. So finding out what really works and not using fatty diets. Plenty of lovely fresh food, cutting down on the carbs, and fat is good. You know, Jack Spratt and his wife had something going on there.
I can't believe you're saying that. And it's one of these things as well that, you know, we were told years ago, low fat, low fat, low fat, cut it out completely. But there is a change, isn't
there? There's a huge shift. Since the 70s changed human beings' diet enormously. It was all low fat, no fat. Cholesterol was the worst thing ever. Forgetting that we actually make cholesterol. If you ate nothing but lettuce leaves, you would still be making cholesterol because you need it for every single cell in your body. When it goes wrong, it's inflamed arteries, like a pipe with, you know, rough edges. It gathers there, and that's how it came to be blamed. So it's only in the 70s that shifted and changed so hugely. Then we got the diabetic epidemic. Not the diabetic leading to obesity, which, you know, from kids of 6 months right the way up a whole generation. It's just been an extraordinary shift and change for human beings. So I think, you know, finding out what the latest thinking is, peer-reviewed, academic, good studies, there are some of them now, good dietitians, nutritionists who know what they're talking about. It's an eating plan for life, for living, for energy, for doing and being. So that is, I think, a very, very important thing. Fertility is an indicator of general health. So particularly for men. So if there is, you know, low sperm counts, and as we know, the WHO did dumb down the, sperm parameters about 10 years ago. So like the old fashioned school teacher, it's kind of like, oh, your sperm count is OK, but could do better. And you can boost it. Diet, sleep, exercise, standing, not sitting down in a slump. You know, I mean, look at the size of you. You're all active, lean, mean, buzzing about.
Thanks a million, Helena.
Outdoors, fishing and all of these kind of things. So you're a very, very good example, Jerry.
Well, can I tell you, do you see that thing on my wrist there?
I
wanted to talk to you about it. It's a Fitbit and I got it for Christmas. And really, honest to God,
I've become
fascinated with it because it's returning stats to me that are really surprising, to be honest with you. But I want to come back to something you said there, and you mentioned it a few times. And I know you incorporated into your work, and this woman is just brilliant when it comes to fertility. Sleep, you mentioned sleep several times, and myself and Katrina were in the office this morning, and Katrina has one upstairs as well. She said, I didn't sleep well at all last night. Did you not, Katrina? So she checked her watch. 4 hours something sleep, and I said, I don't think I did much better. And when I checked mine, 5 hours
really?
Sleep was on mine. And now I checked back when I was off on the break, you know, for the holiday at Christmas, and I was 7 hours plus, to be honest with you. But I thought I was a good sleeper. Katrina said to me, I acknowledged last night I had a bad night. Is that horrendous? 4 and 5?
4 and 5 is far too little. You need about 4 or 5 sleep cycles, which are 90 minutes each. 20 minutes of those is processing everything that's happened during your day. And that's how I work with, you know, trauma and using EMDR to clear trauma, to get rid of any PTSD. If you're not sleeping your full sleep cycles, you're not getting your intermittent REM to clean and clear your brain to reduce anxiety. We have one of the most Googled things is sleep, how to sleep, insomnia. And everybody's using, you know, the Calm apps. But sleep hygiene starts the minute you wake up. It's like, get up, get out of your bed, go and have a walk, do your Pilates, your yoga, get incidental exercise, eat well, see people, interact, have a bit of fun, get some work done, feel a sense of achievement, and go to bed in a dark room. You know these lovely curtains, fancy, beautiful curtains? They are so thin. Now, at this time of the year, it doesn't really matter because it is dark anyway. But during the summertime, when we have light intensity, people are woken up and they get used to the disturbances. The change in our time, you know, our change, that is deeply upsetting to our systems. It changes our rhythm and you get an increase, you get a spike in cardiac events after that.
So would you be in favour of leaving time as it is?
Leave
without
time
changing?
As it is.
Don't change it. Don't change it. Summer, winter time.
Yeah, yeah.
Come back to this sleep thing, because I'll just tell you, I put my cards on the table. Last night, I suppose, I was up watching TV till midnight. I rarely go to bed before midnight, Helena. I just have this thing. I'm at least up till midnight and I could be up till the early hours. And then I just, if I'm watching television or reading or something, I just stop, mainly probably just catching the news at late at night. And then I go to put my head down.
And you're wired to the moon, aren't you? Your brain is buzzing.
Is
as you
that
are
what
there.
It is?
Yeah, yeah. You actually need at least a 1 hour diffusing time. And that is coming down from your day's activity. So you know the rituals of preparing for bed. You know, think of Downton Abbey, people having their hair brushed and clothes, you know, just the whole thing was very, very slow. They used to head up to bed after being in the drawing room and they would, you know, wind down slowly. So we don't. We kind of, we bring the screen in, the laptop is there, we're tapping away, we're checking the last minute, we're getting a buzz of dopamine because somebody has liked a post of ours. No, I really advise my clients, the ones who do well follow this very simple advice. And, you know, they leave devices out of the room. They unwind. They literally de-stress before they go to bed with some type of routine, whether it is setting out clothes for the morning or whatever that they may
so
take.
So do something. Don't leave switching off the telly to the last minute, or, you know, checking your Facebook.
Netflix. You're the last bit of Netflix. Oh,
I've just got it at Christmas. That's what's killing me.
I knew it. I could see Netflix written all over your face. Oh, the guilt of it.
So, Helena, I have to do this. You'd recommend this hour. And is reading okay?
So reading is really good.
Good to wind
now,
you down.
Now, hang on a second. Of course, naturally, there is a caveat, isn't there? There always is. If you're reading something fascinatingly interesting, like a really well-written murder thriller, or you are, you know, something highly technical that you're really focusing, taking notes on, I've done this. it sets your brain that you're actually churning away. So you need to read something relatively light, a kind of a pleasant novel, as opposed to something that is getting your blood pressure up.
Okay, I'm not doing a last minute work for the following day or stuff like that where your mind is still chugging along.
Yeah. Now, it's difficult for teens because we're talking the melatonin angle is different. Teens are wired wide awake at nighttime, and that's why school should start later.
Really? What time would you start at it?
Oh, I think about 10:30 would be good for kids. But can you imagine the nightmare that would be? So, you know, in Australia, there are two schools have done that. They've started a lot later because teens, they just cannot wind down because their melatonin is huge. So we do need to give ourselves as adults the cues of going to bed. If you notice, you know, Germany, in, you know, Central Europe, they go to bed very early. You're talking 9:30 shut down. And they sleep, and then they wake up and they head off and, you know, do whatever they're doing.
Into the day they go. Anyway, good tips there for you at the start of the year if you're wanting to make resolutions to help you along. Helena Tuberty is with me in Late Lunch, and you'd want to be here when the microphones are off and hear what the chat is. Anyway, I do want to come back to something you just said a moment ago there, not on air. And I'm curious, and I want to just you talk to me about this for a moment before we move on. We were talking about, and I did mention addictions in your introduction, and you're not per se an addictions person, but I was saying, of course, you deal with weight loss, and isn't putting on weight an addiction to food?
No, that's a simplistic view. I mean, we have an idea that if you eat less, exercise more, you'd be grand. The thinking now is very much around the idea of high insulin, that so much of the Western world, so many people have pre-diabetes and insulin resistance. And we eat vast amounts of carbs and vast amounts of processed carbs. I mean, you just look at what your diet is. And that is what fuels it. It's the sense that insulin wants to lay down fat. If there's a lot of insulin being produced, it's grabbing the fat and popping it into muscles. It's popping it around your liver. It's you know, laying down fat.
So get away from carbs.
The carbs need to be reduced hugely. And it's quite challenging because we are addicted to our Brennan's bread. I mean, the next snap of cold weather, what'll we have? And I know you've got your Brennan's bread colours on you. But I'm a McCluskey's person myself.
Well, realistically, we are here too,
yes,
big time.
They're
you
wonderful.
Know what I mean?
They're absolutely wonderful. And I love their cafe.
To moderate, even in moderation.
To bring
that.
It right down because, you know, the sense of, and sugar is probably the worst thing. When low fat came in, as we were saying earlier, what happened was there was no flavour, so sugar replaced it. So we have never eaten as much sugar as we have over the last 30 years. So if, you know, New Year's resolution, if you could cut sugar, you will be amazed that even in mayonnaise, there is a form of sugar. And sugar has different names, usually ending in O-S-E, fructose, all of those ones, galactose. If you look out for sugar and just cut down the sugar, eat more fat, your butter, that satisfies the satiety centre in your brain. You feel good. You can begin to use that as fuel when you cut down carbs.
Isn't that just so interesting, the way the thinking changes? And the research, as you mentioned earlier,
the research,
the science,
is immaculate.
Yes.
Ivor Cummins is the guy I'm talking about. He's actually an engineer. So imagine approaching it from an engineering perspective. Why do we have all of these illnesses, the inflammatory processes, the autoimmune stuff, the cardiac problems? What is the underlying cause? And you will find that it is very much driven by the insulin picture.
Interesting. Let's move on. A perfectly lovely psychopath. He posted this, was it the 1st or 2nd of January there? And the next thing, the whole world goes mad.
It exploded.
You may have posted earlier. Was it late last year?
I think it was the New Year. I didn't set out to write it. I just literally started. I suppose I had seen... It was actually a poem written by someone I know through a networking group. And it was Joanne Sweeney. And she's an amazing woman. And she is so completely switched on. She wrote this poem. I was really, really shocked, horrified that she should have been through such a horrific scenario. You know, friends, people I've known, the amount of women who come to me with things like either a primary or a secondary infertility in a second relationship who will have had a very bad relationship, fueling their secondary infertility, if you like. So, you know, resolving that, the trauma of that, the PTSD that can result from trying to extricate themselves, it could be a series of maybe 10 years in their life by the time they actually extricate themselves, if they ever do.
Looking at the blog you wrote, you're talking about somebody here who's not really the person you get into a relationship with. You think they are just...
I suppose, even using the word psychopath, I mean, the response was incredible. You know, were you in my marriage with me? How did you know this? You are speaking exactly. I didn't realise it at the time. I mean, worldwide, the response has been phenomenal. So the sense is that a psychopath isn't someone from a Hollywood movie that you think, oh, there's the bad guy. It is the most personable, charming, sweet, understanding soulmate. Someone who sets out to be that and to be your perfect mirror. Because their personality is fairly shallow, they will reflect and mirror. They will have the same tastes in music. They will have, you know, similar likes, dislikes across the board. And they will understand you like no one else. They will mind you. They will treat you like an absolute, complete princess. But there is a motive, and control is the motive. And over time, it becomes apparent. And people, there will be the best sex in the world, the most perfectly attentive lover. Over time, that will erode. And their real nature will come out. And the person who is in that relationship will always be trying to regain those heady early days, or even 2 years, 3 years. And they will never manage to get it back, because the norm is actually the person they now know. The initial phases was a front to lure them in. Like, you know, casting?
Put the bait out.
Reeling them in and let them play around. I don't know. I don't know much about fishing, but I do think that's a good analogy.
Have to tease them first, of course, wherever you're, and then they take it and they run with it and you have them hooked then. And really, they don't get away unless you decide to release them. You know what I mean? An odd one does, and maybe that is a good analogy as well. You say treat you like a princess. So is it just men that are psychopaths within relationships?
I focused mostly on men. But of course,
it can be women as well who control and manipulate men.
Completely.
How do you recognise somebody? What are the signs early on you should be wary of?
The signs that you should be wary of, there's an entire list.
I see it here, yes. And these, where do people check this out? It's on your website,
it's on
your
website,
blog, isn't it?
Yes, heleneaturbity.com. It's a blog. It's actually Secrets of a Perfectly Lovely Psychopath. And how to spot them early. I just feel that if someone can, even though it's the usually, well, my partner isn't like that, my boyfriend isn't like that. But if somebody can just, you know, the sense of they are not mad, they're not imagining it. If they can become aware, the scales drop from their eyes at an earlier stage, I will feel I've done something to
help.
Okay,
go and read this. It really is. And it has caught the imagination on a huge scale since this woman published it. HeleneTuberty.com and our blog. You can click it in there and it's the most recent article. Just before we finish up, I want to mention one thing. Erectile dysfunction. You deal with this as well. Is it a problem that you're seeing more of, and something that can certainly be attended to and corrected?
As long as there's no physical cause. So I generally recommend that any man who comes to see me will have been checked out by his GP, obviously, because it can be a sign of other pathologies. But if it is an emotional, if it is a psychologically based problem, a relationship based problem, yes, indeed. And certainly within fertility, when someone is trying to become pregnant and there is a window of opportunity, the fertile window, there is pressure on guys. And very often there is temporary erectile dysfunction. And then men of any age can suffer at any stage. And the more you suffer from it, the more difficult it gets. And the fact that there is treatment available, you know, in maybe 2, 3, 4 sessions, very briefly, that something can be done. I think that is, you know, the biggest relief I see in people's faces, saying, I cannot believe my sexual function, my relationship is thriving.
And that is what you've experienced, and you've seen that when you do complete a number of sessions with people, it's very positive and the world is suddenly light again.
Exactly. It's reclaiming something that is a very important part of a functioning relationship. It's a very basic human need, and it can get sidelined in a relationship. When it's been bad, it's like we don't talk, we just carry on. And it's a sadness, it's a lack. Mm. So I love being able to help people of all ages. And, you know, it's when something is doable, why not treat it and feel good?
Great to see you again. It's been a while since you've been here. Good luck with the work. Continued success to you. And you're a great one. You're always moving and shaking and learning and moving on as well. But if you have issues with fertility, stress, anxiety, relationships, and maybe you're struggling with the weight issue at all, give Helena a shout. She'd be delighted to talk to you. HelenaTubberty.com. Don't leave it as long again. See you soon.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank Goodbye. You.
The Late Lunch with Blackstone.